Fulcher, Garchania, welcome. I'm Jamie. I'm Jamie McGlue. And I hope you can, if you're looking at this, you can see the beautiful plants through the window here. I'm slightly silhouetted, but at least the plants are in perfect illumination and focus. If you're just listening, then I hope you can imagine what we're talking about. So, briefly, I'm going to talk about what is Gaelic Awakening. So it's a political party which I've started and I'm in the process of registering. So that I will be running as a candidate for the Dáil elections later this year or early next year, whenever they are, under that party banner, Gaelic Awakening. But in the local council elections upcoming, I'll be running as an independent because the party's not up and running yet. It's a recent creation. So in the previous episode, I talked about why I'm getting involved in the previous two episodes and what I stand for. So you can check that out or go to gaelicawakening.ie and you will see the full list of policies or the main policies with breakdowns of the details. Basically, the most important things are free speech, fair borders, and full sovereignty. What's wrong with that, huh? Everyone should, you would think, support that. So now, but here, Gaelic Awakening, it's much more than a political party. It is a movement. It is a movement which is flowing through my own heart, and through my life. And, I've put this name to it, but basically, I've codified through that name and through some documents I've made what's already happening to me and what I would love to see happen to more Irish people and to Ireland in general. Which is basically spiritual awakening. But then, I like the number seven. So, and the magic number. So we've got seven aspects of awakening, spiritual, emotional, intellectual, physical, political, economic, and cultural. So I'm just going to briefly go through what that means. And, the political, that's what the party is talking about. It's, these are the base, but it's more than that. So here we go. Basically, spiritual awakening is knowing who you really are. Hint, it's not who you think you are, because thinking is this very useful evolutionary tool which has taken over our lives. So it was necessary, but we've gotten to the point where our thinking, we can't distinguish ourself from our mind, and you are not your mind. Okay? So again, you can go to my website if you want to see my breakdown of this, or you can read The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle. But so Ireland was very aware of this in the past. There's very good evidence that the Druids and the Christian mystics, the Celtic Church, until the Vatican-backed English invasion, which over they partly they wanted to get control of the church because it was too open-minded, it seems. I'm sure there's a lot more history to that, but the Christian mystics, they were well aware of this also. That's the nature of Christian mysticism or any mysticism, the oneness with all life. And so this is the basis. Like, I don't see very often spiritual people, genuine, not just like waving beads and trying to be cool, like attention-seeking, people, but genuine spiritual people who are aware of this oneness with all life and this higher dimension of clearer perspective, this hyper reality that we can wake up to, and we realize normal human consciousness is a kind of dream. And people who are schizophrenic or mentally ill, they're not different from normal human beings in kind, but only in degree. We all suffer from the same illusion, which is your mind believing what your mind tells you rather than just mental silence and just seeing with pure awareness, which is our true nature. But anyway, so spiritual awakening, I long for this to flow through Ireland. And there's a great movement already, many people who are reviving this. And there've always been people who throughout history anywhere, I think, who are savvy to this. But I hope to encourage this to grow. And ultimately, there will be no political progress until there is spiritual progress. You can't put the cart before the horse. So, secondly, emotional awakening. And by all of these, I mean like, reaching our full potential. So, Ireland, there's a huge guilt complex. There's a whole thing of like, jealousy and cutting people down if they succeed or if they, try to, if they're proud of themselves. And there's a lot of benefit to the humility from that. But like, anytime someone does something good or talks about their achievements and then the lads start making fun of them, it's not always healthy, but yeah. So addiction, just the trauma from, 800 years of colonialism, obedience to authority, like the Irish have a very rebellious streak, but also a very obedient streak because those who didn't obey got killed or forced to emigrate or imprisoned and sent to Van Diemen's Land over and over and over again. And eventually you start to get the message like, hey, just manage your own kingdom. Don't try to be a hero and get involved in changing the world, And so, and if people, if the big government tells you what to do, if you can avoid fighting back, just go with it, So that's also not so healthy, many other things. But I think emotionally there is room for progress in Ireland, and just being a and being more emotionally open. Like a lot of people, at least from my understanding, from my family, my experience, and what my parents have told me of their experience, and many other people have said is, you don't talk about your emotions, or we didn't talk about our emotions. My parents never told us they loved us, stuff like that. They never touched us. It was like, oh, you do this, do that. And so I think that, of course, is not universal in Ireland, and there's been a great improvement in recent years, but I think there's still a way to go, And so this is, imagine an Ireland where we've actually reached our potential there, where, generally people, we're not just a friendly people, but we're a really happy and peaceful people. That deep sense of lack and, discomfort and grief for various reasons that we carry in our psyche and in our, genetic code, perhaps, and in our memory collectively. That to heal that and then to grow beyond that, and that comes from you need the so these all stack on top of each other, right? But you have the spiritual growth and then the emotional growth is kind of comes upon that, I think, and they feed back into each other. Anyway, all right, intellectual awakening, becoming aware of the way the world is, what is and what should be, and so, that's it. I think, Ireland is aware of Irish people. If we can generalize, there's a great deal of very educated people in Ireland, and the devotion to learning has never disappeared, although it was, largely handicapped again by imperialism and the, being colony of the British Empire. The land of saints and scholars, the island of saints and scholars. This is who we are, and that you can't really get rid of that. And so that drive is still there. Yeah, I would love to see that expand. And I think during recent years with the whole pandemic and all that, and just recent years in general, the bailout of the banks, with taxpayer money, the IMF, the Troika, and all that kind of taking over. I think a lot of people's eyes were a bit opened to the way the world actually works, and that, oh, it almost seems as if the people who really pull the strings and influence have strong influence over our institutions of governance are kind of a little bit like gangsters. Interesting. That's kind of cool. Sounds fun if you're a gangster, but I don't know if that's so good for everyone in general, and so that's part of the dark side of, waking up to the way that we think the world really is. But you need to keep that in balance with the spiritual awakening that we're all one and we're all in this together and we have no enemies. Love thine enemies. The key is to get through the times, the rocky times we're in and are coming. I believe it's absolutely essential that we can bring in a new paradigm spiritually of like, being able to speak truth to power and say, hey, we need to reform this. This is not right. It's not sustainable. It's not pretty. And here's a better way we can do it. You can keep doing what you're doing in a healthier way. We can do what we've been doing in a healthier way. Win-win. And it comes from this spiritual understanding, this vision of not just helping myself flourish, but helping the big self flourish, helping all selves flourish, and imagine how good that's going to be for me when everyone is flourishing. There's always going to be differences. There's always going to be competition and status. That's fine. But there's a million games to play, and you can be a champion of your chosen game. But this idea that, there is a lot of corruption in the political and economic systems. And so that's part of the intellectual awakening, coming to see that. But it's also understanding the way the world works, biology, physics, history, literature, learning the lessons of literature and kind of understanding the ideal habits of or patterns of belief and behavior. So I would love to see Ireland bloom in this fashion. And it's beautiful to see when that is happening already. So then we have physical awakening, which, being health, well, maybe you do. I hope there have been great advances in our understanding of health in recent decades, and it confirms a lot of traditional understandings of, basically being in touch with nature. Get your bare feet on the ground. Go walk around in nature. Very good for you. They've proven that. It comes down to electrical flow and stuff. There's very physical reasons for this. It's not mumbo jumbo. Diet, eating real food, less processed is better. No GMO. A lot of evidence for very, very harmful effects from that. Pesticides, killing all the little bugs that are going to eat the food, so they're killing them, but it doesn't do anything to my stomach, right? Wait a minute, my stomach is also life, bacteria, maybe it's not insects, but is there any chance that the thing which is killing, pesticide, killing these other organisms to protect my food or the profits of my agricultural companies, corporations, is there any chance that that's going to harm my own internal biology? Well, actually, yes. There's a mountain of evidence that that is happening, and behind the soaring rates of disease, that's a big factor. So many things like this, right? But becoming f aware and then embodying it, right? Wisdom is knowledge acted upon, or to know and not act is not to know, as Kevin Trudeau says. Gaining this flowering of the physical body, and then also the connection of Ireland physically, the ecology of Ireland. Stop littering, please. And have reverence like our ancestors did for nature. They saw divinity in all of nature, all the rivers and the mountains and hills and forests and fields and the animals and the plants, and I see that too. And full disclosure, I talk to trees in Irish, or call them teacher or friend or it is consciousness. When you have the spiritual understanding, right, that spiritual awakening, and look, I'm not all the way there. I'm on the road, many people are, and welcome to the road. If you're on the road with me, it's a pleasure to be with you. And if you think it's wacky, look into it more. It's the least wacky thing in the world. It is just truth. It's your true nature. Try it out. What's there to lose? If it doesn't make sense, you'll figure that out. You're a smart guy, right, or gal, right? It's a conscious element of the universe. So, of course, it has some degree of being and awareness. It is aware. Does it know what I'm saying? I'm not sure. But nonetheless, you don't need to go that way if you don't. But, I have nothing to hide here. So I'll tell you that's what I do. Being connected with nature, enjoying nature and being healthy and strong, and, Don't just go eat a bunch of fried junk and then sink a million pints of Guinness. Okay, have 3 pints of Guinness. Maybe eat some junk food once a month, and then the rest of the time eat clean, so that your body is strong and sexy and beautiful and healthy, and your mind works clearly, so you can write good poetry, you can play good music, you can understand things, you can be funnier because your brain works. It's not like some daggy, like boring thing. It's the most interesting thing, health, and it makes everything better. Everything, if you know what I mean. Okay, so then political awakening. So basically becoming aware of what is the ideal way to organize society and the v countless competing claims to authority and to what we should do collectively. So when it's my own life, we don't call it politics. That's just my will and what I'm doing and what I'm trying, my plans. When it comes to family, suddenly it's our family politics. There's competing and cooperating wills and desires, and you have to negotiate that. So managing conflict, right, and finding compromise, and then you have local politics, you have national, international, interplanetary maybe politics, is there politics in heaven? What do you reckon? Maybe there's just seamless play. But anyway, so understanding how we can negotiate our differences, and how we can organize the system of limits upon people's freedom, to maximize freedom and to maximize well-being and maximize human flourishing. And so I don't label myself unless it's useful. That's part of the spiritual awakening. Looking beyond the labels, not being, oh, tree, but don't label it at all. Just look at it, see what it is. And you'll see something much deeper than just the symbol tree, but sometimes it's useful. So I would label myself as a classical liberal or a libertarian or a free market capitalist. Basically, I believe in letting people be as free as possible. I believe you have the right to do whatever you want to do with your life, so long as you don't prevent others from enjoying the same right. So, that means there's the blurry edges on some issues, like maybe I want to smoke a cigarette and you're next to me in the street. Should I stop? Or, but maybe we can talk about that together. It's not that big a deal. Or we just avoid each other. There's always going to be some things you can't explain or articulate fully through language. We need to make peace with that. But there will be some bigger things where it's like, oh, abortion, should that be legal? Are you killing? Or are you just defending your right to your own body and how you want it to be? That's pretty complicated. So we might, struggle on some issues. But the overall system is, we just want the best system we can find. And I be strongly believe the evidence points not to socialism, not to communism, not to fascism, not to neoliberalism, like, using the government to cut costs and maximize profit for the very wealthy, believing that's somehow going to help the little people, the little guys, not the leprechauns, the middle class. Oh, we don't have a middle class anymore. Oh, sorry, the poor, sorry. So liberty. So basically, government not doing too much. Basically, anything the government does, it needs to take money out of taxpayers' pockets to put it somewhere else. And often it doesn't do a very good job and it wastes a bunch of resources in the process. And sometimes it's trying to fix things that don't even need fixing, or et cetera, et cetera. So, we can talk about the details of that, but that's my position. And I believe that's not, I'm open to, new evidence and new arguments, but I firmly believe that this is just the way of nature. It's reflected in the way all natural systems work: decentralization, localized authority, and cooperation and competition driving excellence. So you maximize competition when you kind of get the government out of the way and you let people, individuals, solve problems, what people want and need, solve them independently. And then the person who does it best is going to attract the most resources. And if they start creating a monopoly, other people will start, who worked for them, will split off, and start doing their own thing to get a bigger share of the pie, providing the same thing at like a better price. And then the monopoly shrinks back and the cycle repeats over and over. And so I believe the political awakening is becoming aware, A, that there is a whole lot of nasty business. It's not just mass incompetence, but there is mass corruption in our political and economic systems. We're basically living in a neo-feudal society where it's a type of fascism, not Nazism. There's not a racist element, but well, maybe a little bit, but not really. maybe a little bit against white people these days. You can't be racist against white people. Oh, that's the most racist thing I've ever heard. I thought race is irrelevant. Read Martin Luther King. Anyway, fascism meaning the fusion of corporate and state power. So when you have the government building up these huge monopolies or duopolies or big corporations, which it then uses to manage the economy and deprive the individual of liberty, and the government can just take over these corporations whenever it wants. That last bit is not really present in the West at this point, but it is in China. But it does seem like the West is being pushed that way by, the Great Reset and all that kind of stuff. So anyway, the political awakening is becoming aware of the way things are and the way that things should be in terms of how do we organize the political and legal system. And cool. And so you become aware of it and then you start acting upon it, even if that's just educating yourself more so that when conversations come up, you can articulate the truth clearly and help spread awareness so that we can get things on a good path. And side note, again, tying back to the core awakening, which is spiritual awakening, is there is a time to speak the truth and persuade people, but there are also many times when, it's the person, it's like don't cast pearls before swine, Sometimes they're just not, person's not at the level where they're ready to consider your ideas, So you can talk, but they don't want to even entertain it. So if someone's skeptical, but they're open to logically processing your ideas or even just trying to find reasons to argue against it, that could be fruitful. You might eventually help each other improve your understandings. But there are many cases when it's like, don't try to control the person. And like, if they've got their beliefs and they don't want to change them, okay, that's their right. They have the right to have erroneous ideas if they want. After all, many people will think I have erroneous ideas and I want them to give me that respect. Okay, Jamie, you do your thing, So I should, the golden rule, treat others as we would like to be treated. So yeah, not being too attached to the truth. The truth needs no defense, as Eckhart Tolle says. But nonetheless, it's beneficial to spread the truth. It's a bit of a paradox there. All right, so moving on to economic awakening. So of course, when you've got the right political system, I would say libertarianism, or at least, which would be, the government provides politicians, bureaucrats, judges, police, military. Basically, it's got a monopoly on the controlled use of violence, and it has the biggest stick in town, and that deters, gangs and mafias from arising and breaking the whole system. And I think eventually, when the spiritual awakening is strong enough, we won't need any of that. We can have pure libertarianism, pure anarcho-capitalism, if I'm using that term correctly. But I think, honestly, at this point, we're not ready for that because, many people are not aware enough, both in terms of just education and also moral training, like the ability to do follow your conscience and be a good person and not, lie to yourself and lie to others to, just benefit yourself over the rest, like a cancer, spread yourself rather, at the expense of the greater organism. So I think at this point, a small government is better than no government. And also we're so far into, socialism and central planning. By the way, all the countries of the world are socialist at this point, meaning government intervention in the economy, allegedly or supposedly for the benefit of the citizens. But in reality, like the United States is a very socialist country, but it's mostly socialism for huge corporations, you know, subsidies, you know, tax breaks, hyper regulation, making it impossible to get involved in certain businesses unless you've got an army of accountants and lawyers, etc. Ireland, very socialist. The government is hugely involved in all kinds of things. You know, you can barely sell food. You know, this guy is trying to build a house on his land down in Tipperary, is it? And the government, or the judiciary, trying to put him in prison, or they're going to, or they have. I haven't followed the story that recently. But you know, I wish him very well because it's his land, not the government's land. The government is his employee. It's his land. And he's building a house. They didn't give him planning permission. And then he goes, okay, well, I need a house. I'm going to build this little, you know, log hut on my land. Beautiful little thing. And it's his, you know, home. And they're like, oh, no, you can't do that. It's like, but meanwhile, they're letting people in from God knows where and just giving them free houses. How is that fair? So anyway, we're talking about economic awakening, right? Okay. So the political awakening of understanding the right way being basically minimal government. So those things I said before, and then also on top of that, maybe for the time being, we could have education, healthcare, but run by government, but just scaled down so that taxpayers keep more money. And you know, you can look in, you know, into my documents more to understand how that works in practice and why that makes sense. It's very counterintuitive, but notice that what's been tried is failing. The housing crisis just keeps getting worse the more and more the government gets involved. What if the solution is less government? What if that is why we didn't have housing crises back in the day? The government was much less involved. Notice that every time central planning and, you know, bureaucracies get involved, outcomes get worse. So insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. Sanity is waking up and taking stock and being able to make change. But the economic awakening happens in the space opened up by that political awakening. But it's basically that, you know, people have wants and needs. The Irish people have wants and needs. And, you know, Ireland herself has wants and needs. Definitely needs. I'd say wants. I think Ireland's probably a conscious entity as well. I don't know, but I feel like, you know, again, it's a huge mass of consciousness. Everything's consciousness. When you have that spiritual understanding, then there's a huge island in the sea with a bunch of conscious organisms in all these complex, you know, infinitely complex networks. Why wouldn't that be a conscious entity? And you know, that's what our ancestors thought. And so I think that's what's going on. And then that, you know, Mother Ireland, Era, is Eru, is a cell within Gaia, the planet, you know, which is a cell within, you know, what, the universe or whatever. I think it's all, you know, and our cells within us, you know, it's all like holographic in that way. I think our cells have a certain consciousness. Anyway, so we have wants and needs, and the economic awakening is becoming self-sufficient to the point of overflowing where you can help other people. And the beautiful thing is, through free market capitalism, the way to help myself, I can grow my own plants, I can keep chickens, I can have rain tanks and filters, I can, you know, have a generator, I can, you know, do all these things, I can, you know, get some skills so I can, you know, build stuff myself and fix stuff myself. Those are ways to cut costs and, you know, kind of get things done without having to lose resources by getting someone else to do it for you. But a lot of the benefits you can make economically are by solving other people's problems. So I teach English, right, and some other things, but and so by help solving people have a need or a want to improve their English fluency, and I can solve that for them, and they give me money because they're like, hey, I've got a bunch of other money as well, but I really need English. So yeah, I would rather have that extra hour of devotion to developing my English than this, 42 euros. And so here you go, let's trade. And from my perspective, it's like, yeah, well, I can teach English all the time. So like, and I need money. I got a family. So yeah, give me that 42 euros and I'll help you with your English. Mutually beneficial trades. So that's the way free market capitalism works. But the nature is, so through developing my own self-sufficiency, I am naturally helping others develop their own, right? But then on top of that, we can also, once we're, imagine Ireland where, there's a huge middle class and people have a lot of savings, they're very self-sufficient, all these huge long, my nana's garden, so she's no longer with us, but her, well, she's with us in another dimension, but her back garden was this huge long space, and I believe once upon a time these sorts of houses, they were full of vegetables. People were growing their own food. These days it's just grass. But why not? We can, it's beautiful, it's really fun growing your own food, and it's incredibly delicious and healthy. You know exactly what's gone into it. And I believe apparently you can even do things where, like with seeds, you lick it when you put it in the ground, and your own DNA is getting into the process, and so the plant will produce food which is perfectly optimized for you. Now, I don't know that. I haven't double checked that, but I've heard that from two different sources. But even apart from that, just growing your food yourself, you have a connection to it. And there are ways. So economic awakening for Ireland is this vision of, imagine like Ireland, where from all over the island, we're taking care of our own needs. We're not dependent on handouts from some bureaucracy which detests us half the time. We're healthy. We have enough of what we need, and we are solving each other's problems creatively, not through, again, not through some big brother coming down to try to do it for us, but just through our own creativity and power of will and intelligence, we are able to be self-sufficient to the point of overflowing where we can help each other. And I believe, charity naturally springs forth when you've got your own abundance. So, all right. And then finally, yeah, okay. Finally, cultural awakening. So this means, culture is your beliefs and behavior. And so by cultural awakening, I'm thinking of Ireland updating, renewing, reviving, rejuvenating our beliefs about what is and what should be, and our behavior, which flows on from that. Your behavior follows your beliefs. Part of that is a lot. The principal part of that, I believe, is well, the spiritual awakening connects us to higher awareness bit by bit, and we can start to notice, become more perceptive about what's healthy and what's not, what's wise and what's not, and so we can avail of this to renew our customs and our ways of behaving, and so. A large part of that is going into the past and looking at our traditions, our Gaelic traditions, and reviving the things that have been lost that are very worthy. And Ireland is like, has so much potential culturally, just in general. But Ireland, it just blows my mind. People generally have a good impression of Ireland, but Ireland is just like the most interesting country, and it's, people have no idea. Like, even I think most Irish people have no idea how interesting our history is and who we are. Like, it's like we're like the main characters on Earth, but we're just hanging out with like these flat caps, sipping a pint, like, oh yeah, do you know this song? Da, 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 da. And oh yeah, cool, all right, cool, and whatever, but yeah, it's like, Newgrange is older than the pyramids. It's astrologically aligned. It's incredible. They don't know how they built it. The druids, like the, okay, the poets were like up the very elite. Ireland reset education, the lamps of learning in Europe after the fall of the Roman Empire, hence the moniker, the Island of Saints and Scholars. But anyway, I think we have a lot to be proud of there, but also a lot to take advantage of. Like, look at all this. People have, our ancestors put in all the legwork for us. We don't need to reinvent the wheel. We can look at traditions and go, what makes sense to us now? Some of it surely won't, right? Like, oh, they were okay with, like enslaving people, or some of them were. Yeah, let's skip that. But this thing here, oh, yeah, that looks really good. Like, let's do that. Let's whatever it is, stop littering. Let's revere nature. Going into the best of Gaelic Irish tradition and reviving, taking what's good there, not throwing out the baby with the bathwater, but throwing out the bathwater, and then also traveling widely, and taking the best of that. So all the Irish going to Australia, look around, open your eyes. What's good about Australia that could, and can you imagine bringing that back to Ireland? What benefits can you imagine? I'm born and raised in Australia, almost at Ireland, not this lifetime. Yeah, and so there's a lot of benefits which I'm aware of in the good things about Australia, which I would love to bring to Ireland, and I'm hoping to, and vice versa. I think there's a lot in Ireland that Australia can benefit from and is via the Irish. And all around the world, traveling broad, widely, we can bring, we can clarify our awareness of what are good beliefs and behavior, and just update things, and then part of that relates to immigration. So, just letting people in from all over the world unvetted is very unwise. Like, if you read a history book, that's a recipe for disaster. We're all one. And this is the beautiful thing. When you balance things out properly, you have a lot more wriggle room. You have a lot more freedom to kind of articulate things. Like, I can say the best policy immigration-wise is probably to limit, completely overnight, stop illegal immigration. Asylum seekers, enforce the Dublin III regulations. So if it's their first port of call, okay, we process them here. And if they've been refused, okay, they go to another country and they can appeal it if they want from there, maybe, or whatever, figure out the details. But if they've come through another safe country, then no, you can't come here. That's not the law. And we have enough problems to deal with here. We can't just be giving everyone everything. We have to take care of home first. Our primary responsibility is Ireland, not the world. Through healing Ireland, we will heal the world, but we have to start at home. And me, with say I'm trying to heal Ireland, my primary responsibility is to heal my family before Ireland, because my family is Ireland. And so through helping and my family heal and grow and flourish, I help Ireland heal and grow and flourish. And some of it's simultaneous, but a lot of it would be like you do it through your family, and then the benefits spring forth spontaneously. And then through Ireland, we help Ireland. Naturally, that's going to have an effect on the rest of the world and these other countries where there are genuine, terrible things going on in many countries. But there's also people taking advantage of the situation. And so, I have the, awareness that we're all one and that we're all equal. And yet I can also say, yes, but many people are not at that level where they understand this, and they will behave selfishly. And in many cases, it's not even about selfishness, but just they have different beliefs. They believe, women, can be touched and harassed. Well, can be touched if they're not accompanied by a man, for example. Some people believe that, quite a few people. Or they believe you can be killed if you insult certain religious figures. Whereas in Ireland, it's like, well, that would be disrespectful, and you're a bit of an idiot if you do that. But no, you can't just kill them for that. Come on. That's crazy. So there are cultural differences, and it's very hard to change your personal habits, and it's even harder to change collective habits, because often when people start to change, the people around them get intimidated by it and threatened, and they feel judged, like you saying what I'm doing is bad, and they push back against it, and you have peer pressure keeping things solidified as they are. And so it's quite challenging. And so if you have a small number of newcomers coming into a friend circle or a school or a country, then they will be naturally kind of influenced and pressured socially. to fit in and to change their ways. But if you have too many too quick and they can form ghettos, then they're not going to change. That's just human nature. And so I'd say the illegal immigration needs to stop immediately. And even legal immigration should be reduced to a minimum. Just, if there are people who have skills that we need, then okay, great. But the whole idea of like, yeah, a country is a thing where you just constantly take in waves of new people. It's like, that's not what a country is. Like the world is full of suffering. But if you like a similar example is a house. If homeless people, 10 homeless people come in, like, hey, can I, or one homeless person, can I come and live in your house? You absolutely have the right to say, no, I'm so sorry, you can't do that. Because there's too much unknown. I don't know if I can trust you. Even if I know you're a beautiful person, it's my house. I've worked for this. You can go and work and create your own life. And I have the sovereign right to my own space, and my own property, life, liberty, and property. And so, so the same thing with a country, if we want to bring people in, asylum seekers, that's a beautiful thing, but they have to be genuine. And also, even then, there are limits. If there was a huge famine in Ireland and we barely have enough food and someone's trying to come in, I'd be like, yeah, it's not really good timing. Maybe there's another place you could, try. And just to bring it back to the real situation, I think some immigration is useful, but Ireland's now, I think, 22% foreign born, which includes people like me who are basically ethnically Irish and culturally very similar. I was raised by Irish people in Australia, so there's some differences there for sure. But pretty, and I'm very, obsessed with Irish culture and history, and fairly in sync with the Irish culture in many ways. But nonetheless, I'm foreign born. But most of them, it's people from other cultures, and a lot of these people are amazing. The people I teach English, and I know these people, and I love these people. But I think they are also, the vast majority of them are also aware, like, yeah, no, there's, of course, there's like limits. No country would just allow everyone in. It's kind of shocking what some European countries do. They just let everyone in. And I think, especially in the Irish context, where we were plantationed, we were genocided, we were colonized, and through enormous amounts of suffering and sacrifice, we won back our own personal space nationally. That now these elites in Brussels and Davos and whatever, and their lackeys in Leinster House, are kind of just saying, yeah, other people can come in here, with reckless abandon. I think it's deeply, it's not the fault of the people coming. They're just doing what anyone would do to get the best opportunity they can, but it's deeply disrespectful and not just disrespectful, but it's absolutely a shocking scandal and crime that is being perpetrated on Ireland. Because again, you need to have that balance. You can love every single human being and yet also not want them all in your house. It's not racism to be like, no, I like my house with just me and my family. I like my country with just me and my countrymen or my countrywomen. There are benefits to immigration for sure, but I think the benefits are often overstated. Like, the benefits you get from having, 10% of the country being foreign born, adding an extra 5% is probably going to only cause problems, because you're making it harder for that process of assimilation to occur, and also you start maybe causing a backlash where people get they feel like. Look, I just want to be walking around in my town, and suddenly it seems like this isn't my town anymore. It's a different place. The beliefs and behaviors of the people are suddenly quite different, and it's quite a sad thing. Imagine your house where someone's changing your house and you have no say in it. So I think anyone who thinks like, no, it's all racist, they're all crazy. It's like, well, I think I'm inviting you here to have a bit more empathy, and to think if with an open mind and an open heart. The balance point is controlled immigration. A lot, by the way, people genuinely fleeing war zones. You can, for every one person you could support in Ireland, you can support like 50 of them if you put them in Turkey or in wherever, some other, country where you have a deal with the government. Yeah, we'll pay you a good amount of income. You've got a lot of problems. You want more money? to help solve your problems. Here's some money, and house them there where they're safe from persecution. So the whole thing, you know, and again, there's details of this on my website and in those documents. But I've, you know, gone into this in a bit of depth because it is kind of the number one hot topic at the moment in Ireland, and it touches on a lot of issues which are quite complicated. But so part of the cultural awakening is reviving our native traditions, getting the best from other cultures, and developing new things, you know, with upon the fountain, you know, of insight from our spiritual and emotional and intellectual and physical and political and economic awakenings. And a very important part of that would be Irish, Gaeilge, the Irish language, which I don't think anyone should be forced to speak, although in school perhaps it makes sense, but although there should definitely be reform, I believe, to make it more enjoyable and thus more productive learning Irish in school. And as a language teacher, I have very practical ideas about how to do that. But it seems some things are working very well, but I think other things, it seems like not really, you know, it could definitely be improved. But yeah, you know, in Ireland, which is bilingual, similar to the Quebec, French Canada, where they slip between French and English in the middle of a sentence, it's like lightning, you know, finding the path of least resistance. It's like, oh, this idea is explained better in English, or it just pops into, so it just pops into my head in English, whereas the rest of my sentence was in French. I think that's a beautiful thing that I do. I mean, I can barely speak Irish, so I'm still learning. So when I'm speaking Irish, I'll slip into English and then back into Irish. But also, I'll speak English and I'll throw in a bit of Irish, like quite often, you know. Just but that's more like any, you know. Yeah, if it feels good, you know, I'll do it. And so I think Ireland in general, like we have the opportunity to be kind of bringing in a more bilingual element, which is very good for your brain, but also just, you know, absolutely beautiful, this language we have and the rich connotations and wells of meaning we can draw upon there. So that would be a big part of this cultural awakening. And just to connect that a bit to immigration, they're mutually exclusive. You cannot let in half the world and expand fluency in the Irish language. You know, all these people coming from some Ukraine or from Georgia or from, you know, Nigeria or wherever, how many of them do you think are going to learn English and Irish simultaneously? Okay, so we have a choice basically on that point, which connects to a bigger choice. But here is what do you prioritize? Reviving the language of our ancestors, which is intentionally attempted by imperialists to be destroyed, and which is incredibly beautiful and valuable in many ways, which I list on my document, principles, oh, sorry, on the front page of my website, when talking about reviving traditions and the benefits of Gaeilge. Do we want to do that, revive this, or is it more important to bring in people from around the world, even when there's a great deal of fraud going on, and even the people who are genuine can be better provided for having them in other countries, with us, you know, helping out financially. So, and this all connects to this bigger thing of just having boundaries. And when you have that, the beautiful thing about being balanced and not being, oh, I'm too cool for spiritual awakening, is when you've got that and you speak the language of love and you say, yeah, we are all one and we're all, you know, God's children, we're all branches on the same great tree, but this is branch Ireland, that's branch Nigeria, and you know, we have separate ways of growing, and you know, we don't need to be constantly entangled. Like maybe our leaves can touch and sway and have fun and whatever, but it's nice that there are two branches. It's interesting. Nigeria is beautiful and interesting, Ireland's beautiful and interesting in different ways. And if we just have the world swarming with mass immigration, so we're all some global monoculture, is that really going to have more diversity? No, there'll be far less diversity. So people naturally want to maintain their uniqueness in communities and in nations, and that maximizes cultural diversity around the planet. And we can travel around the world, and you know, Japan, they've got their way of, you know, 200 years from now, the Japanese, the way they'll be seeing things and experimenting with things, will be different to the way that, you know, Australia is seeing things and experimenting with things, or, you know, France. And these can we can co-inspire each other, and we can specialize in different angles of living through our different cultural lenses. And so actually, there's benefits to immigration and cross-pollination of ideas, but there's a great many benefits also to controlling immigration, and not least of which is maintaining diversity of culture around the world, and all the benefits that flow on from that. So, and so this is the vision for cultural awakening in Ireland, and that's just the seventh layer of the whole Gaelic awakening, which is what I'm talking about. And these are just words, but it brings together a vision of what we can do, like practically, you know, feet on the ground, we can go do this. And I am doing this myself to the extent I can. And many people are, even if they don't call it Gaelic awakening, you know, it's already happening. So if you like this word, and you like the way I'm phrasing it, then please help me spread it. But I dream that this will also happen all around the world, you know, similar things. Because ultimately, this isn't my special idea. This is just basically spiritual awakening, which is knowing who you are, and then all the flow-on effects of that as it blooms through emotions, intellect, physicality, like your body, the body of nature of your country, the political system, the economic system, and the culture, the beliefs and behavior of these beautiful human beings going about their business, living their lives. And trying to serve truth and beauty and goodness to the greatest of our ability. So this is the vision. What do you reckon? I like it. It's even Lam Shin. It's even Lam Sha. So now, how are we doing for time? Oh my God, that was much longer than anticipated. Shock and awe. 52 minutes. All right, so finish with a little song. I don't have a guitar with me. My baby is sleeping fairly close by, but maybe awake by this point. So I didn't bring it into the room. But I'm gonna go. This is a little bit of like sometimes I sing to my little wee girl in Irish, just making things up. And if anyone who's working on your Irish, this is a great way to just kind of. Yeah, practice is sing, maybe start when no one's around, like with a kind of Irish, you know, Shannos-esque kind of like all these runs and weird mixes of melodies, you can extend things. And so you have a word, and then if you can't think of the next thing to say, you can kind of just extend it out a bit, and then until something else pops into your head, or repeat words you said before. And so, a little something like this. Achishlemachri sivanlamhu beimwishlachila egoni indoan beter. Is fate a Danish lechain gra? So like, oh, you know, Kishlamahri, like darling, my darling, I love you. We are together always. Maybe we can go there in love or something like that. You know, so it barely makes sense, but Shine Gadirach. So. Gormila Mahaguiv, everyone, thank you so much. And if you want to join the party, I'm registering members, so that which will help us, you know, get the we need 300 members to, and we're not yet at 300, okay? But we need 300 to be able to lodge the formal registration documents, and then we can run in the elections. You can, you know. Share this video. Check out the website, www.gaelicawakening.ie. And there, I will quickly show you. You can see here it is. Free speech, fair borders, full sovereignty. And so this is the political party you can join the movement, but also it's a cultural movement. Very important. I almost forgot to, or two things I've almost forgot to say earlier about economic awakening. Part of that is, like not getting lost in material possessions and money and stuff, but having that embedded in a deeper vision of beauty. Life is about connection, love, beauty, and exploring your own potential and freedom and your deepest truth, and sharing this with each other, uplifting each other. And we have wants and needs. We have needs. We should provide for them. And we have wants, but the wants aren't necessarily very reasonable always. So a big part of the economic awakening is actually knowing what we really want and what's actually good for us, and wanting good things, and then helping each other get those things. But so not getting lost in fancy cars and houses, but if you really just love being in the present moment in a beautiful house, and it's not like, oh, I'm just trying to impress someone, but it's actually, then I get the house and it's not really satisfying, and then I'm a bit depressed because I thought it would satisfy me. If you're avoiding that kind of trap and you're like, no, I just love being in this huge house, then that's healthy and that's cool and you earned it. Enjoy. Enjoy the dream of the big house. But yeah, so that's a big part of the economic awakening, is having wiser wants, which we are providing for. And the second thing is that this is a cultural movement. So Gaelic awakening is primarily directed at and the Irish, and most of the Irish are ethnic Irish, Gaelic ancestry. But within that, you have people from the Vikings, you have people from the Normans, you have people from, French or whatever, Spanish. There's a mix of genetics in Ireland, right? And maybe even in the old stories, they say there's a mix of Tuatha De Danann, genetics and Gaelic genetics, who were the invaders, way back when. And so, and the 20 odd percent of Ireland who are not ethnic Irish, Gaelic, they offer many beautiful things to Ireland, and they are part of Ireland, and we are all one. So this is a delicate thing, but we need to preserve Ireland and have fair, reasonable borders, just like individually we have, as a family you have. You don't let other families boss you around or people tell your family what to do. You have a border. Hey, you can't cross this red line. And as a nation, we need that. But also, we need it embedded in this deeper understanding that we're all one human family, and that there are many benefits to the different cultures, and it helps us in many ways, not just food, but just ways of thinking and experiences. For example, people from Eastern Bloc countries, whether it's the Czech Republic or Poland or Ukraine or whatever, they can have many lessons about communism and how giving all the power to the government is a terrible idea. Now, in Ireland, we kind of already ha have a pretty good understanding of that, or we should from our history, but this is just one example. But culture has many benefits, and these people, many of them are Irish citizens now. And if so, anyone listening, if you identify as Irish and you were living in Ireland, then you are Irish in my book. Now you are not Irish in the same way as someone whose family has been in Ireland for like forever and speaks Irish. I speak Irish, or I'm learning Irish. I'm Gaelic a Briste, my broken Irish. But I'm genetically Irish, but I sound Australian, and I'm raised in Australia. Well, I was raised in Australia, and so I am very different in that way. So it's like a big, beautiful overlapping Venn diagram flower thing. Someone can be a Muslim, they can Pakistani origin, living in Ireland, and if they're living here long enough, Or if they're just really resonate, maybe past life they were Irish, or whatever, but just or they just resonate with Ireland, they really love it, then they can be more Irish than the Irish pretty quick, And what Irish is a thing, it's a like a living organism. It's changing over time, like great artists, change. Each album is different. And each century in Ireland is different. And I think the challenge for us is to be able to be having the love in our heart, but the discretion and discernment in our minds to be able to walk that balance of saying, yeah, look, everyone who's here, welcome. You're here. Like we have an agreement in we had an agreement, and this you came here seeking a better life, and because you thought this looks like a good place, and thank you for being here, and let's create a beautiful society together. And negotiating certain details, like yeah, we were here first, so of course, like there's a certain cultural preeminence which comes to the native culture. Like yeah, we this is how we do it. We're this particular aspect of life. So in the negotiations, it'll have more power there, and it should in general lean towards the native ways. In general. But when it comes to the point where we are now, it's like, do we need to make it from 22% foreign born, which has a lot of, differences of culture, and keeping in mind what we said about the need to assimilate and to have everyone on the same page, more or less, on the fundamentals. You can be different on, little things, but like the basic fundamentals of life, like you need to be playing the same sport. You can't be half the pitch playing cricket, half playing, football. It's not going to work. So do we really need 30% foreign born? Do we need 40%? No, we don't. And that wouldn't be good for spiritual awakening and for the flowering of love and understanding in Ireland, and therefore through our contribution in the world. So it's all about balance, and it's a tricky thing, but I think the universe is learning through us, and it is teaching through us. And it's a beautiful time to be alive. But Ireland at this time, I believe, like all countries in the world, we need to find that balance and to understand, these countries where people are emigrating from, in most cases, those people would actually be helping the country if they stayed there. The doctors trained in Pakistan, but then they're leaving because they want to get a better life. But then Pakistan just trained a doctor for 20 years and now that's gone. That's not so good for Pakistan. And that a lot of the time, people, the root causes of people fleeing their countries or just emigrating from their countries is corruption and lack of opportunity, and ultimately the need for an awakening movement in their own country. So let's kick it off in Ireland. And once again, like in times gone by, many moons ago, let's inspire the world to higher consciousness. Amen. All right, thanks for listening and watching, everyone. Please go to the website, join the movement if you're interested, and be yourself. Thank you. Go Míle maith agaibh.